Welcome to Ask an Atheist. We're a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. We air live from Scan Studios every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, and we're archived online at www.askanatheist.tv. I'm your host for today, Sam Mulvey, and brought here intelligently and by design is Scott Leopold. How you doing?
Pretty good, Sam.
Awesome. Bit off the cuff today. I don't know if you've noticed, but we've borrowed Charlie Rose's studio. He's not actually here, but we're hanging out. And some technical stuff, but we actually pole vaulted it pretty well, and so we're ready for the show. We do have some announcements today, and I think we'll go right into that because we got a lot of topics.
Yep.
We've got a local group plug, and it comes from Matthew Medina. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. And it goes like this: Hi, Casey, Mike, Sam, Jerry, Libby, and company. This is Matthew Medina. I'm one of the co-organizers of the Eastside Atheists and Agnostics Meetup Group. I love the show. Hey! I am jealous as I really wanted to be a part of it. I signed up for the scan training, but timing just never worked out for me. Well, there'll be time in the future, I'm sure. But I greatly enjoy seeing and listening to the podcast. I just wanted to ask if you guys wouldn't mind giving our meetup group a plug on the upcoming show, which would be today, the 22nd. And I think we want to do the plug?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I've attached a link with to the meetup URL. We have two regular meetups. The second Wednesday of each month, we have a dinner at a local restaurant and hearty discussions, and we have a monthly power lunch that takes place the last Friday of each month. We also have hikes, a movie night, a book club, and occasional speakers. We are already plugging your show to the group, trying to get everyone to tune in. I hope for continued success of the show, and if you ever want to have a representative from our meetup on the show, I'd happily volunteer. Thanks. Well, that's one of the many groups that we have around here. It's the Eastside Meetup Group. I think I've been there a couple times. I think you frequent there.
Okay? A couple of times, yeah.
Yeah. And again, one thing right out of the gate, we are a call-in show. So give us a call if you have anything you'd like to talk about. Our phone number is 206-421-5658. And we also have emails. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv and give us there's a form on the right-hand side where you can email us. And you can also email us directly at questions@askanatheist.tv. And the website has been, the website's been a going concern for a little while now. We've got some really interesting posts about Obama and whether or not he's a Muslim, which we'll talk about later. We've got some interesting feedback on the Star Trek episode, and there's a lot of commentary on there, so I really invite you to come on in and take a look at the website. And we also have a podcast, and I'm really, I suppose I shouldn't be that surprised that the podcast is going as much as it is from all the feedback we got when we didn't have a podcast, but last week's podcast, which was episode 4, which I did a little preamble for because it was a rerun, we did do a rerun last week, I got over like 800 downloads just in the few days I was watching it.
We're going.
We're doing pretty well. And thank you guys. Thank you guys for letting us see that you're paying attention to us, I suppose. But bring those questions, bring those ideas, bring the discussion. We'd love to hear from you. So really, that's, like I said, 520 was closed off. Just to make a call back to a previous episode, I think they're reinstalling the trolls this week.
Somebody has to have that job.
Yeah, somebody's got to hold the bridge up. I don't know.
I'm glad I don't have to use it.
Well, some of us do, and that's, I'm coming from the South Sound, but we've got some folks who work on the show that way, so we're worried about it. But in more atheist-specific news today, this is the elephant in the room as far as I'm concerned, is the Pew poll that finds 1 in 5 Americans wrongly believe Barack Obama is a Muslim. And this comes to us from ABC News.
This is never going to go away.
Yeah. Nearly 1 in 5 Americans now incorrectly believes that President Obama is a Muslim, evidence of growing confusion among the population about the president's faith. The new poll from nonpartisan Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life found that 18% of those surveyed wrongly identified Obama as a Muslim, up from 11% in March 2009. At the same time, the number of Americans who knew correctly that Obama is a Christian has declined from 48% in March 2009 to 34% today. But 43% of Americans now say they don't know what Obama's religion is at all.
I think half of these people are trolls.
No, that's a pretty significant drop. I mean, and it's really interesting because he did have that brouhaha with that guy early on in with the preacher in Chicago who went a little crazy once Obama said, no, I'm not going to hang out with that guy anymore. But, I mean, his faith entered into it right in the primaries, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say what I think I'm thinking. You know, I don't want to call people out, but nobody ever accused Bill Clinton of being a follower of Akankar or anything like that. You know, there's certain social dynamics going on in American politics that are playing in here that wouldn't normally play if somebody else was president.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it, but it's very strange that number is decreasing.
Yeah, and even with him having brought Rick Warren in didn't seem to help at all. That was kind of, you know, mm-hmm. Who would have expected that?
And who knows? I mean, he got sworn in on a Bible. He said repeatedly. He went and spoke to Muslims, but he made it clear that he wasn't a Muslim. And then when he gave his Nobel Peace Prize speech, he referenced Niebuhr, who's a theologian, a Christian theologian, and it's really strange to me. And just like with the birth certificate, we have their birth certificate, and that birth certificate has more data on it than mine. You know, and somehow that's not a birth certificate, so am I not an American? Ooh, who knows?
Yeah, well, that's not going to go away either.
No. That's the nice thing about conspiracies. Proof against is still proof for.
That's
so
right.
I believe you've got a story for us.
Yes, I do. This one, Federal Appeals Court says highway crosses are unconstitutional. This is from Bill Mears, who's a CNN senior producer, and this is from Wednesday the 18th. Memorial crosses erected along Utah public roads to honor fallen state highway troopers have been found unconstitutional by a federal appeals court. A three-judge panel of the 10th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled Wednesday that the 14 large crosses would be viewed by most passing motorists as, quote, government's endorsement of Christianity, unquote. We hold that these memorials have the impermissible effect of conveying to the reasonable observer the message that the state prefers or otherwise endorses a certain religion, unquote, concluded the Denver, Colorado-based court. The state of Utah and a private trooper association have the option of appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Texas Atheists, a Texas-based group called American Atheists, successfully sued 5 years ago to have the nonprofit memorial project scrapped and crosses removed from the public property. In rejecting the crosses, the appeals court made several arguments, such as the large size and location of the crosses on busy public highways where motorists cannot help but notice. Other similar memorial crosses have been erected on public land, such as Arlington National Cemetery, to honor fallen war dead. But the judges noted that those markers are generally accessible or visible only to those who expressly choose to visit them, unlike roads where citizens cannot help but see them. So it has the effect of appearing like it's being endorsed by the state.
Yeah, it's a big billboard. It sounds like it's a big billboard on public land that are just huge crosses. And they say in the article and in the argument for that crosses are somehow a pan-religious symbol. And that's really strange to me, considering that the cross is the symbol of one of the most important aspects of the Christian faith.
Yeah, and these are 4 meters tall.
These are
13
tall.
Feet tall. That's not a small decoration on the side of the highway.
No.
That's a big stadium.
And do they have other options? Like, can they get something other than a cross if the
nope.
fallen officers?
And nope.
This is the interesting thing, is we were talking about this before, and public land by definition is governed by the Bill of Rights. It's not like private land where I can say, you know, I don't like what you're saying, scram.
Yeah.
And if one construes a public installation piece as speech, then they should. It seems like on its face you should allow public speech on public land. However, these are 14. They're 4 meter crosses, and they're
not innocuous. They're huge. I mean, it's not like a small symbol at the state capitol or something.
It really
dominates the landscape. And to me, it's like. If you have something that large and people can't help but notice it, it really does appear to be an endorsement. And I think, at least on a legal level, you could you could win this on at least one of the parts of the Lemon Test, that it's excessive entanglement between the state and religion.
Yeah.
One of those grounds. But I think that it would. I think it's going to have a hard time.
The Lemon Test is something you're going to get into a little later.
We're
going to
talk about
show.
That. Yep.
I only heard about it recently, and I'm very interested in it. But our final story for today comes to us from MSNBC, and it's a Saudi judge considers punishment by paralysis, just to show that we're not picking on Christians today. Amnesty International has spoken out against a Saudi judge who earlier this week asked hospitals in the country whether they cut the spinal cord of a man who was convicted of paralyzing another man in a fight. We urge the Saudi Arabian authorities not to carry out such a punishment, which amounts to nothing less than torture. Hasiba Haj Saruhi, director of Amnesty's Middle East and North Africa program, said in a statement. While those guilty of a crime should be held accountable, intentionally paralyzing a man in this way would constitute torture and be a breach of the international human rights obligations. Earlier this week, the brother of the victim, Abdulaziz Al-Mutariri, 22, told the media that the judge in the case was making inquiries about the deliberate paralysis. The convicted man in the case allegedly attacked Al-Mutariri with a cleaver 2 years ago, leaving Al-Mutariri paralyzed. He subsequently lost one of his feet. And the story goes on to say that a copy of the medical report from King Khaled Hospital in Tabuk province, obtained by the AP, said that the same injury Al-Mutariri suffers from can be inflicted on his attacker using a nerve stimulant and inducing the same injuries in the same locations. The report was dated 6 months ago. There's not much I can add to this that wasn't already kind of in the story, is that this constitutes torture. And I've read it, and it looks like what happened was a fight, and fights usually are entered into by mutual agreement. But this is part of the reason I'm an atheist. This is what happens when you let religious law dominate your decisions about justice.
We may not be perfect, but do you need a better example of why you need a separation of church and state? I mean, this is clear-cut.
How does paralyzing a guy rehabilitate him? How does it help the person who's been paralyzed? How does that pay the person back who was paralyzed? I mean, all the things that we look at to justice, save for pure revenge, are missing in this application of law. And is that how religion suggests that we run our society? Most religious people wouldn't say so. Most Muslims wouldn't say so. And for the most part, I'd believe them. But we do have this. But when you let religious ideas dominate the culture, you end up with some really crazy stuff, which is why we've gotten together today. And before we start on our topic, I'd like to again remind people that this is a call-in show, and our phone number is 206-421-5658. And if you call us, we'll get right on with our banana, Ray C. Crocoduck. Ta-da. and that brings us to the subject, and that's why we've got the banana today, is that our subject is intelligent design, and that's something that means quite a bit to you.
It does. Intelligent design, what it is and what it isn't. This is something I want to talk about because the intelligent design debate / creationism, whatever moniker you want to call it, and whatever incarnation, it's not going away. It's going to be around for a long time. As we heard from Philip Johnson of the Discovery Institute when they lost the Kitzmiller versus Dover Board of Education case, he said, wow, kind of like he got blindsided. I guess it's going to take us a little longer to achieve our goals than I thought. So it's not going away. So what it is and what it isn't, it's important to know some basic tenets of intelligent design so that you can distinguish it from other forms of anti-evolution. Intelligent design is simply the latest incarnation or descent with modification of the original creationism, which was the creation science was the idea of Genesis-based creation theory. And because I think it was 1968 in the Epperson case when the Supreme Court declared that Arkansas could no longer require the teaching of creationism because it was inherently religious, the creationists decided to put their thinking caps back on and come up with something that was plausibly sounding a little bit more scientific, hence the name intelligent design.
Yeah.
The problem is that intelligent design presupposes that there are some structures in biology and organisms that are so complex that they couldn't possibly have evolved on their own. And It's not a scientific proposition because it's neither testable nor has it been tested, and it's not falsifiable. Plus, there's always the aspect of, well, who is the intelligent designer? Well, it's nudge, nudge, wink, wink, God.
Yeah, it's always ends up being God or something. Is it's, you know, the person who's creating the life always ends up being the creator of the universe as well. This isn't an argument for panspermia. This is an argument for a created universe.
That's right.
And I think it's worth noting that intelligent design is really what it was called a few years ago. Intelligent design is a phrase that people understand now, but intelligent design has kind of fallen out of favor because it's been legally tested, and now they're calling it other things like teach the controversy, which we'll talk about later.
Right.
So I mean, this isn't intelligent design is sort of the watchword we're using for all of this, but don't look for the words intelligent design. This is one of those cases where you really have to listen to the arguments of the people making them. So,
yeah. Going back to 1925, the Scopes monkey trial, there was John Thomas Scopes was a biology teacher, and he was accused of violating Tennessee's Butler Act, which prohibited the teaching of evolution. And although he lost his case, even though he was defended by the well-known ACLU attorney Clarence Darrow, and he was only fined a symbolic $100, and that was dismissed because of a technicality.
Well, symbolic $100 in 1925.
The real punishment was that for the next several decades, most biology publishers simply omitted evolution from their texts. So it had a real chilling effect on education in the United States.
The wider effects are obviously what happened to discussion of evolution in public school. But I do like people go, oh, $100, that was just a token punishment. That's $100 in 1925 dollars. That'd buy you a spaceship.
Well, and he didn't have to pay it because it was suspended on a technicality because the judge ruled it was supposed to have been done by a jury or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't even have to end up paying it, but that's hardly that's not the big thing.
Now I don't feel so bad for Scopes.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that he didn't really want to be in the limelight either. But
just everyone else.
Yes. So there's two kinds of anti-evolutionism today. One is, as I mentioned before, the Bible-based creation science, also known as creationism, which is taken directly from the book of Genesis. And the second one is design-based, and that's, you know, the purposeful arrangement of parts and the ubiquitous irreducible complexity.
Irreducible complexity.
Yes.
Many syllables in that phrase. And
yes.
We'll say one thing about the strictly Bible-based creationists, and one of the few articles of praise I'll probably offer for that is at least they're honest. They're like, this is our book. This is where it comes from.
Yep.
The end. It's about as simple as my, you know, it's about the same level as my definition for atheism, which is we don't believe in God, the end.
Or right.
We don't think there is a God, the end. You know, there's a few ways you can.
Or the universe doesn't give a damn what you think.
Yeah, or the universe doesn't care.
Right.
Whether or not we believe in God or think there's evidence for God.
So I want to share some talking points about intelligent design because it's important to be able to recognize it and, you know, have a good idea of what kind of arguments to counter with. Mm. Intelligent design avoids the religious association that characterized the original creationism by examining gaps in the fossil record, claiming that evolution is not fact when, in reality, evolution has withstood the test of time, 150, 160 some odd years.
Right.
And it has come to be regarded as fact in the scientific community, and the fact that it's a theory as opposed to, you know, in science, you don't talk about a theory becoming fact. A theory is where you want to get in science.
Yeah.
The theory, the wave theory of light has replaced the, you know, the ether theory of light. The theory of gravity is a theory, and it's all about taking a bunch of facts or ideas that point either generally or specifically in a certain direction.
And if I may quote one of my favorite television cooks, that's another show. We actually have planned a whole episode specifically talking about a single word, which is theory, because it doesn't mean what I think it means, and according to asking questions, most people don't understand what theory means from a scientific perspective, and we really deserve some focus, so we will be talking about that. And while we're talking, if you would like to talk to us, again, if we can get the number up there, our phone number is 206-421-5658. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, but you were saying?
Well, another thing about intelligent design is that It seeks to create validity for itself by saying, teach the controversy. I remember George W. Bush more than once saying, you know, they should teach the controversy. And that's kind of a telling statement, because that's all there is to teach, the controversy. There is no science to teach. It's not a scientific proposition. It is inherently religious. It's religion itself. And that is what Judge Jones articulated very forcefully and unequivocally in his decision.
I've heard the original legal thrust of intelligent design being described as the same creationist arguments dressed up in the clothing of information theory.
Yeah, junk science.
Junk science, mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. In fact, we don't have the graphic with us, but there's when they took the text from the original creationism and they mapped out the use of the word creationism, it was used until, it was like exclusively used until, was it the 1968 Supreme Court case when they ruled creationism unconstitutional in public schools. And then there was this switch, 180-degree switch, to using the term intelligent design, where the word creationism had been. And this was in the original documents that were used to publish the theory. And it was sort of like the smoking gun that proved that intelligent design was nothing more than a descendant with modification of the original creationism.
Sort of an evolution of creationism.
That's exactly what it was.
Is what one of the more modern descript evolutions of creationism is teach the controversy, which is I think a little more honest is that there is a controversy about evolution. We're having to talk about it today. There's articles about it in scientific magazines and non-scientific magazines all the time. And so there is a controversy. However, it is not a scientific controversy.
It is not.
And there is some discussion as to whether or not this controversy should be taught in schools, absent the people who are pushing creationism, in that we live in a world where we live in a country, at least, that... Where creationism is still trying to be pushed as an idea, and they're trying to come up with counter-arguments of evolution, and should we teach the fact that these counter-arguments that people are often putting in front of us are in fact scientifically incorrect or don't stand the tests?
That's right.
And most scientific educators believe that we shouldn't be teaching that. And I kind of disagree to a certain extent, but I don't want to off track. Maybe we can get back to that a little later.
Yeah. Well, the problem with offering to teach, whether it's creationism or intelligent design, side by side, as they say, teach the controversy, is that, first of all, other countries, Japan, Korea, China, would just love nothing more than for us to dumb down our youth by teaching them creationism or, you know, some kind of religion in place of science, because when you go to apply to a college, if you are coming from a school where they offered only intelligent design or where that was sort of competing with a real science curriculum, that's going to erode your credibility, and it's not going to look good in the academic world.
Yeah, I think it's a little mean to say, well, the other countries would love it if we do that, because then we would all become stupid. I think they have some concerns when the country with the biggest military starts saying that science doesn't actually work.
Yeah.
And, and you know, there's that. But I mean, the thing I was saying about the educational thing isn't that we teach creationism, is that we teach that there are people who believe this. Like, we don't teach civics in school anymore.
Yeah.
And part of the reason, we, as far as I know from educators, is that we hear from these people, we have a call, and oh, wow, we have a call. We've got Gary in from Sheffield, England, I believe. Gary, are you with us?
How you doing? Okay.
All right.
Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, great. How are you? I've emailed you before, but I'm not going to go into that. I have actually got a problem with atheism as you see it.
Okay, what's your problem?
Basically, what is, not so much you guys, because you're pretty new, but I've got a problem with Matt Dillahunty and a thing that I keep saying. It keeps saying there's no evidence for God,
mm-hmm.
until there is, I don't believe in God. Therefore, you're leaving a back door open, wide open, for the theists to get into you.
What would that back door be?
Basically, you're saying that what I want Matt to say and you guys to say is there definitely is no God.
Okay.
But we don't
This is a hard atheism versus soft atheism, and then ultra hard atheism or hardcore atheism. Mm. I don't know what you want to call it.
Soft atheism. There's only one atheism, and that is, remember, theism is the most destructive force mankind has ever faced. No, I'm not kidding.
A lot of people believe that. I think the jury might still be out. It's one of the things is that atheism stems from the reason we talk about evidence is that we are atheists, and this is what the show is about. We are atheists, we are skeptics, and we believe in the separation of church and state. And my atheism stems from my skepticism.
Am I okay to come back at you with an Americanism? You're doing a half-assed job. You need to say, stop.
I understand you think we're doing a half-assed job, but again, the reason we've arrived at atheism is because we try to take a naturalistic look at the universe, and we try to look at it with the scientific method, and the scientific says, and the scientific process has brought us no evidence for God whatsoever, but we have to remain, and we've talked about this on the show, we have to have an open mind, we have to be able to take in new evidence. Open-mindedness is not just saying we are willing to accept any evidence, anything you say whatsoever. We look at the evidence. If the evidence is testable, and the evidence says that there is a God, then we're going to have to revisit things. But the fact is, all the work we've done up until this point, there is no evidence for that. And that's why it's important.
The world is doomed then. Until people put the foot down and say there is no God.
Okay. I think when
people are going to either believe in him. What we need to do is put a foot down and say there are no gods whatsoever until people start looking after and making the world a better place for everyone. I've met people from all. I'm from England. I've met people from all religions. There's good, there's bad people from all religions, believe you me. And what we need to do is stamp it out that there is no God.
There is no God. I mean, there are social times when. There are times when we're not having a long discussion about atheism where they say, what do you believe? Well, I don't. There is no God. It's the world is what we've come from, and our understanding of the universe comes from science, and that's the best thing we've got. But when people want to talk about the whys and hows of why I think there is no God, that's where the skepticism is. That's where the scientific method comes in. And if we're going to be honest about the way we arrived at our atheism, we have to say that the process under which we made that decision also includes a way where if the theists want to step up to the plate and use the process to show us the existence of God, then they have the opportunity to do so. We're not saying the conversation is over. We're saying that absent any other evidence, I have made my decision, and this is how I believe the universe works.
And Gary, I get the impression that you're frustrated because we atheists, skeptics, don't exactly speak with a unified voice. We don't all say in unison, there is no God. We're kind of a bit scattered in our positioning of it. Is that correct?
You keep saying that. We've got no evidence for God. And until the end, we're going to be atheists. And you call yourself atheist. I want to redefine the word atheist. Atheist is there is no God. Now,
if we let everybody redefine atheism to how they wanted it to be, atheism would be about, I don't know, half a billion words, because there would be a definition for atheism for every atheist.
I mean, that's why
I keep my definition as simple as possible with as few as words as possible, is that...
And there you've got the back door where theists are going to keep coming at you.
I don't see it as a back door. I see it as a front door to keep the conversation open. If they're willing to play... If they're willing to live in the methods and the ideas that brought our society and our civilization and Homo sapiens sapiens as far as we've gotten, if they're gonna play with that, they have some rules they have to find, and they're gonna have to find some real evidence. And if they can bring that real evidence, then we're gonna have to listen to it. But do I think that they're ever gonna come up with that evidence? What do you think the answer to that is?
I need atheism to be a brick wall that says stop. I need atheism to be an impenetrable brick wall that says, stop now, there is no God. I need it to be an unbreakable brick wall what says stop. Do you know what I mean? It's, otherwise, the world's going to pop. We're doomed.
That's forecasting, and if you'll bring us evidence to support that supposition, I'll go with it. I mean, that's what skepticism is to me, and it just sounds to me that you want atheism to have a lot of the same attributes that faith has.
You want it to be more dogmatic.
We have to make a dogma.
You've hit the nail on the head. I want atheism.
Okay. Well, the one thing I've said about my personal atheism is that if you're doing it dogmatically, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. Is I think we gotta leave it open to let the evidence speak for itself, to let science speak for itself, to let religion speak for itself.
Don't let any religion speak what you need to do as an atheist. Well, I think you're borderline agnostic. I need you to start proselytizing. Have you seen Richard, what's his name, American, English naturalist bloke, scientist,
okay.
What's his name, Dawkins?
What would you have the tenets of our faith, if you want? I mean, it sounds like you want us to be a bit more dogmatic, and we don't have a dogma.
Richard Dawkins, yeah. Right? He put that thing on side of us, saying, probably. No God.
Mm.
Right. If
you push people, that's what we're going to come up with. And I think this conversation could go on for a while, Gary. And I'm really glad you called. Thank you for calling in. We've had this conversation going back and forth a while. I look forward to talking to you again, sir.
I'll think of some new. I've got some new stuff, and I'll link up another week. Okey-doke.
I'd love to hear it. Well, thank you for your call.
You look after yourself.
You.
You too. I have been waiting for that one for a while, and I'm really glad to hear from him, and that was just amazing.
he wants atheism to be more dogmatic.
Yeah.
Atheism as a religion. Well, if atheism is a religion, then bald
there,
as a hairpin.
There are people who find, I mean, I understand that the drive to want to say something with authority. And I understand that one to say there is no God, period, and then just have people deal with it and move on from the issue. I'm tired of talking to the issue. I've made my decision. Can we move on? But saying something with authority is the doorway through which dogma appears.
Exactly.
And dogma really bothers me way more than... It's not the fact that these people are believers. It's not the fact that these people are religious. I have... Most of my friends are religious, and I love them, and they're great people, and they're moral people. And they believe that I'm a moral person, too. But their dogma says otherwise.
Yeah. And
it's when we escape from that dogma that I think we grow. And because atheism is such a simplistic doctrine, I think we, more than anyone else, can avoid that dogma.
I think so. It's important to also remember that you've got a lot of great, you know, leading atheist spokespersons out there, from Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, Dennett, and Harris and others. Yeah.
Have you seen Hitchens lately?
Yeah.
I'm amazed. I am just completely amazed and happy to have him keep talking.
It's great.
What he's saying. And he's like, if you hear me recanting on my deathbed,
yeah.
Do not believe it. It's probably the drugs or somebody lying.
Right. And like, I want to also, and just to address a point, Gary, that you were making earlier about us, you know, not speaking with one voice. Even Sam Harris has come out and said, you know, we should stop calling ourselves atheists. We shouldn't give ourselves a label. We should essentially just, you know, say who we are, which is we're, you know, ethical, honest, upright, moral people. But you don't hear Hitchens and Dawkins and Dennett and Harris going at, you know, what's the best, what's my label, what's your label. I don't think that's important. I think it's important to let people give themselves their own name and show by their own example, by how they live their life, where they get their moral compass. I think that's probably one of our biggest challenges, is showing that, you know, we're not devoid of morality just because we don't have a religion.
Yeah, yeah, that's the big one for me, is when we go to, and Gary, please respond to this. You're gone, so we're going to talk about you. Please respond to this, and you will get your say. And is that when I go to when I do these booths for Seattle Atheists, and people come up to us and say, blah, 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 atheist, blah, blah, blah. And they want to fight about atheism. And then sometimes I pull them aside, and this works surprising well, as I say, look, let's put the ideology aside for now, for a second, because we're not talking about science. We're talking about morality. And I say, do you believe that atheists are capable of making moral decisions, are working from a morality, even though they don't have that religious background? Most of the time, and that might be just because we're in Seattle, they say yeah.
Could be.
And once they say yeah, I go, well, then this debate is happy fun time for us. We're just trying to reach an understanding. I don't actually have any issue, any significant issue with you at all. And I know that sometimes separates me from a lot of atheists, but really, I just want people to understand that we exist and we're good people and we make moral decisions just like everyone else.
And it's also, I want to reiterate that for centuries and centuries, religion has had that free ride of respect, that default.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a person of faith, you know, just put the title Reverend in front of somebody's name, they're automatically entitled to some kind of respect. And a lot of what is...
Didn't work for me.
Yeah, and a lot of what's driving atheism and the atheist movement is the fact that, no, just because you claim to believe in something that cannot be proven, just because you have faith in some kind of dogma, does not entitle you automatically to any kind of respect, especially if you can't provide evidence for what you believe in.
Yeah.
It's, you know...
One final thing, and I think we should probably get back to the topic at hand, is I said this on the website, and there's a post on the website that I encourage everyone to check out. It's about the Star Trek episode. It's called The Wrath of RTK, and then Khan, because I was making a Star Trek joke, ha ha ha. And I'm thinking that we might have to redo some of the preamble, because to me, this show isn't really so much about atheism as when you get right down and dirty, it's about atheists. Is that the Ask an Atheist tries not to have an Ask an Atheist voice, an Ask an Atheist an editorial opinion. We let the people who are sitting at this table have the editorial opinion about what they want to talk about. And I feel that going to a dogmatic approach of atheism would destroy that idea somewhat. Is that as we are atheists in the media, we would suddenly... we have to toe some sort of dogmatic line. And like I said, we should probably get back to our topic. But if you would like to call in, even if you are in the States, definitely, if you're anywhere, the moon, an alternate dimension. Actually, you're coming from an alternate dimension, I'd like to know, and evidence would be great. 206-421-5658. And we were talking about intelligent design at some point.
Yes. Well, among some of the points I wanted to make, too, about intelligent design and how it differs from the scientific method is that unlike scientific inquiry, intelligent design attempts to do an end run around the peer review process. Now, this is something that they moan and bitch about when they hear us complaining about it, but the fact is that they don't do a peer review process. Yes, if you go to the Discovery Institute's webpage, you can see a whole plethora of their articles and their own way of reviewing and their own way of presenting what they consider evidence. The problem is that the evidence that they claim to have and the kind of research that they do does not stand up to the larger peer review process, and that's what science is about. It's you come up with a theory, a proposal, and then the rest of the scientific community tears it apart. And it doesn't take 100 scientists to destroy your theory if you're wrong. It only takes one.
And they call their stuff peer-reviewed because it's kind of... But the thing is that you do kind of reconstruct what peer means. Peer review, as far as I understand, I'm not actually a scientist myself, is peer review by fellow scientists. And that's not what's happening... here is they've got their own little crowd, the Discovery Institute does, and I feel a little weird because, like, we make a big deal about how nice and open that Seattle is, but we're still in the United States. The Discovery Institute is right here. There's Mars Hill here, and it is in fact everywhere.
Yep.
But but like I said, they've just reconstrued what peer means, and it's not necessarily a peer of fellow scientists.
That's right.
But that's why they can go on legally... it's a group of peers. So they can go to these court cases and say, peer-reviewed, yeah.
That's right. Also, you know, the purposeful arrangement of parts, which is one of their arguments, is not a scientific argument. You know, we recognize watches, keyboards, and computers because we are their creator. And then the whole idea of irreducible complexity, that's a negative argument. Essentially what they're trying to say is, well... evolution and the fossil record and even DNA doesn't explain exactly how everything got there.
Banana dances in for failed arguments.
Yes.
About intelligent design.
Absolutely. It needs to have the letters R-A-Y on there. But, you know, it's, you know, their idea is, well, evolution is faulty, therefore we win by default. It's a negative argument, and it doesn't it just doesn't stand up, and that's why they're just not going to be taken seriously.
Right. And
let's see. Did you want to move on to some of the quotes?
Sure. Okay. We can definitely do that.
And before we do that, I also wanted to. One of my favorite things is, you know, Einstein has got to be one of the most misquoted guys.
Here we go.
In history. You know, everyone knows that famous quote of God doesn't play dice with the universe. You know, that means that Einstein believed in God. Well, no, he didn't. He did not believe in a God. And so I want to set the record straight, and I'm going to quote him directly here. I do not believe in a personal God, and I have never denied this, but have expressed it clearly. If something is in me which can be called religion, then it is the unbounded admiration for the structure of the world so far as our science can reveal it. He didn't believe in an ethereal or, you know, hairy muffin cloud kind of God. He believed that God was the universe itself, and that our ability to discover the laws of physics, discover nature, was our way of knowing the mind of God.
So how is that distinct from a pantheist, because the idea of pantheism is either everything is God or God is in everyone?
I don't think the distinction is that important. It's just that he didn't want any one thing to be embodied as God. It was the universe itself. In fact, he actually says several times about the mysticism of science, the mystery of the universe. That to him was the very essence of God, learning to discover the universe. I mean, he gave us the general and special theories of relativity. These were his way of understanding what the universe is. It was about discovering the laws. It wasn't about some disembodied spirit.
So it sounds like God was a problem to be solved in a way.
Well, I suppose you could look at it that way. I mean, his view of it is that science and the universe and God are all kind of a mystery.
Okay. We also had a clip for that. Did you want to show the clip?
Let's see.
Which one was that?
Clip number one.
Okay.
Let's go to clip number one if we can.
Can we queue up that one? At some point.
Let us
know. But I know Einstein is a bit of a personal. That's a conversation we've had a lot.
It is. The other ones, clip number two, if you have that. Starts out that a man can take pleasure in marching to the strains of a marching band. Einstein absolutely hated that. He said that, all this person needs, if they love marching to military music, all they needed was a spine. They didn't need the fact that he had a brain was a mistake. All he needed was a spinal cord.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
Are we ready for that? All right, here it is.
That a man can take pleasure in marching in formation to the strains of a band is enough to make me despise him. He has only been given his big brain by mistake. A backbone was all he needed. This plague spot of civilization ought to be abolished with all possible speed. 100 times every day I remind myself that my inner and outer life depend on the labors of other men, living and dead, and that I must exert myself in order to give, in the measure as I have received and am still receiving. Albert Einstein.
Yeah,
not mincing words there.
No, it doesn't mince words. And Einstein was definitely a man of peace and a man of reason. So I wanted to just get that out there because I'm really tired of hearing people say that Einstein believed in a God, kind of like the conventional, you know, theistic vision of God. That's absolutely not correct.
We do have a call. Shall we dive right into that?
Let's go.
We've got Chris in Seattle. Are you there, Chris? Hello, Chris.
Chris, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, hi. I love the show, by the way.
Thank you.
You guys are talking a lot about evolution, and I wanted to run by you this evolutionary idea that I've been thinking about. I wanted to get your feedback on.
Okay.
A lot of evolutionary biologists are somewhat reticent about how it began. Dawkins will drone on endlessly about his own personal beliefs, but he never talks about how it started. How do you go from nothing to a single-celled organism? And it's my contention that life did not begin in the oceans because of the randomness of fluid water. You know, you need some sort of pre-life
precursor
geometry. And so it's my idea that maybe life began deep under the ground in the mantle because water under extremely high pressure resembles ice. Except it's not ice, it's very hot, and so that provided the energy and the organization to help, you know, kind of like a crystalline template, for lack of a better word, to help organize the beginnings of life, and then it migrated to the bottom of the ocean.
That is an argument I've heard before, and I'm not really competent to judge the argument, but it's very clear that people, that the scientific community believes that life started with the extremophiles, and what you are describing is sort of the extremophile of extremophiles. So it seems really, really plausible to me.
I'm kind of disappointed that you heard that before, because I thought I came up with that on my own.
I'm sorry.
I'll cry about it later, but I think about that caller, that English caller who called you earlier.
Yeah.
I think what he wanted was just for you to use the dictionary's definition and to not deviate away from the dictionary, because you don't want to be confused with agnostics. You don't want to be lumped in with agnostics. You just simply deny the existence of God, period. There's no equivocation on that.
But yes, people are not defined by dictionaries, and the dictionary is a very dangerous tool.
No, the dictionary is the only place on the planet where you will find an unbiased description of the universe, nowhere else.
Sure. If you look up theory in the dictionary, usually it says hypothesis. And that's...
Well, the word theory has plenty of definitions, and idiots like Kirk Cameron tend to conflate those definitions. But for the scientist, theory is a hypothesis that has stood the test of time.
Right,
is a well-established hypothesis.
But it can also mean idle speculation, which is what I was just presenting you with earlier.
And also, don't forget that in this whole debate about evolution, intelligent design, at no point does the theory of evolution, Darwinian evolution, attempt to explain how life originally started. You know, biogenesis, the precursors to life, the scaffolding.
Yeah.
Maybe it started in hydrothermal vents, down where it was very hot and there was a lot of sulfur. I mean, we don't know that, and that's outside the scope of what we can talk about, but that's not part of a discussion of evolution. You know, how life started is a great question. It's a great mystery, but that's not what we're going to cover.
And for the record, the water under high pressure being like ice is not one I've heard before. So there is, I'll say there is some originality to the argument.
And
so
also
you guys do realize that intelligent design is just a synonym for God.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can use it to describe the process of evolution, which of course is pantheism, so it's just there to confuse the issue. I can't believe you guys are still talking about it.
Well, we're still talking about it because it's still being talked about. We're still facing it.
I thought the argument went away, but you might not remember me. I called a couple months ago arguing about the finite state machine.
I thought it might be you.
Was that you?
I wanted to expand on that because I really didn't have the presence of mind to make my argument. Your portly friend said the crab can't write Hamlet.
Right.
What I should have said to him is give it some time, give it a couple hundred million years, and maybe the crab will be able to do that because you don't know what the potential of that organism is going to be.
Right.
And, your cell phone is a finite state machine. It doesn't lay eggs. Okay? If you guys have children, you know that your children are a literal extension of your own existence. A literal piece of you gets extended.
But that's an argument based on evolution has sort of a limitation based on the complexity of the organism, where, we do have these computer networks that are very large and very complex and
have a lot
of the things that look like life. So is it? I mean, this is.
Your computer is bounded by the inherent limitations of the atomic structure of silicon. The crab is carbon and can lay eggs. It's part of an infinite algorithm.
But
at one point,
the crab couldn't lay eggs and had to evolve to exist and underwent a very long-term process in order to be able to lay those eggs. The whole problem is this goes straight into the thing which people won't talk about, which you brought up, which was a biogenesis. That's not something that is particularly well-defined right now. It's something that the scientific community is still researching. And I hesitate to call it a gap, but that's because they definitely have a full theory there. If I may plug one of my favorite YouTube people, CDK007 has a very interesting video on a biogenesis that I encourage people to check out. And once we have a clear idea about what that means, we'll be able to say whether or not any finite state machine can fall under the strictures of evolution. And one of the things I did say was that since is that the evolution is sort of a meta process, but it has to exist within what we believe is a bounded universe. So by definition, that does make evolution a finite state machine as well.
Well, I'll just politely disagree. I consider it an infinite algorithm. I just can't prove it to you. But thanks for listening to me, and I really do love the show.
Thank you very much for calling back. I really like to continue these conversations. And it actually reminds me of a story, is that he said finite state machine, and I thought he was making a joke, and I think he was. But yeah. we never actually said flying spaghetti monster, and everybody accused me of not knowing what the flying spaghetti monster was. And at that very moment, Becky, my girlfriend, was actually with the Seattle Flying Spaghetti Monster, which is on the Wikipedia page. So I was pretty familiar with what the Flying Spaghetti Monster was.
CDK007 Ring Zero, is that the guy, the video that says the universe just started? Is that that one?
He's got that one video. The one that I really like that he did was the evolution of clocks, where he did a genetic programming algorithm based on clocks and shows how the creationist argument that you can't put... clock parts in a bag and shake them and get a clock out of it. And
exactly.
He says, well, if you put clocks under the same potentialities that protein molecules have, they will evolve clocks if the environment is such that clocks are a good thing.
Yep.
And at the end he says, well, how come this never happens in reality? Simple. Clocks aren't alive. This is about evolution, not a biogenesis.
Yep. Well, why don't we move on to some of our favorite quotes? I wrote some quotes down here, and I thought maybe we'd take a moment while we've got some time left here to throw some fun ones out here. Why don't you take the odd ones? I'll take the even ones.
Oh.
Read off mine if you want.
Where are we?
Okay. Here.
Okay, so these are just a series of quotes, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Well, the first one is, the invisible and the non-existent look very much alike.
Remember who said that?
And you said that you have that down as Julia Sweeney.
I think it was Julia Sweeney.
Okay.
In her Letting Go of God.
One of my favorite Carl Sagan quotes is the invisible pink dragon in my garage.
Oh yes.
And the same thing is he's invisible, you can't see him, but he can breathe fire. He can open my cans when I can't open
Golden
them.
Golden teapot.
And, yeah, he can drive me out to the right. drive-in theater when I want to go see a late movie.
Yep.
And but he's invisible and you can't see him. And he's like, how is that different from something who's not
exactly?
Existing?
How about? Now, here's one from good old Albert Einstein. If people are good only because they fear punishment and hope for a reward, then we are a sorry lot indeed. You know, Al, you couldn't have said it better.
It depends on how you construe punishment. I mean, there's a lot of psychological theories that are based on you know, punishment isn't necessarily somebody hates you. Punishment is sometimes just a bad outcome.
But it also gave rise to, you know, Pascal's wager and other... thinly disguised attempts to hedge a bet. If atheism is a religion, then bald is a hair color.
We use this one a lot in Tacoma. We use this one a lot in Tacoma. At one of the bars I go to, somebody came up to us. We weren't actually talking about atheism, but they knew we were atheists. And they came up to me and said, well, you know, you guys... And this ties right in. It's like, you guys have a faith and a dogma all your own. Da, 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 da. You
have a belief
system. It's you have a belief system. You have a religion. It's just based off of atheism. And we're like, no. And we just started up with bald as a hair color. And his response was, well, it is on the driver's license. And really?
Yeah.
And but you know, I guess that's the kind of conversation you get when you're at a bar. Hanging out. And if you'd like to have that kind of conversation at a bar, or a better one, you can join us at the Ram in Northgate, our usual get-together. And I believe we're getting together at 5, was it?
Mm-hmm.
We'll meet us there at 5. And, 4:30. Haha, silly me.
Good burgers.
Good burgers, good beer. And we've had people show up, and it's always an interesting time. Like I said, we do a little bit of debriefing about how the show went, and grumble, grumble, the sound was weird. Except this is the one episode where the sound has been solid.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Good job.
You know what I'm talking about. And, but yeah, come on out. Have a good time. I won't be able to make it because I got a meeting to run to, but there will definitely be a bunch of people there.
So I think I'll finish on my favorite quote. This is the one that I enjoy the most. Science has questions that may never be answered. Religion has answers that may never be questioned. Which of those two universes would you rather live in?
Wow.
You know,
oh boy.
That kind of says it all right there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And the thing about science is that every time, science and technology and engineering, is every time we hit a barrier so far, we find a way past that barrier, and our degrees of understanding increased a lot. Like, you know, somebody said, well, it's going to be really difficult to see evolution in a lab because evolution happens across so long a period of time, except here we are, 20-year study. Somebody had the patience to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have evolution in the lab, and it's pretty amazing. And that's I guess we're sort of nearing the end of our topic, or at least for today. Intelligent design, you know, why are we talking about it?
It's God of the gaps.
God of the gaps, all that. It's the trials, the most recent trials have ended, but the controversy, the social controversy, not, and I'm not talking about the scientific controversy because it really isn't one.
And political.
The political and the social controversy hasn't ended. It is as atheists and as skeptics and as people who agree that science does its job, we need to be aware of it.
It's not going to go away because
it's
their goal is
nowhere.
Is the re-Christianization of the American school system and this is spelled out in their wedge document.
Ooh,
you know,
right.
the doing away with the scientific materialism and having a theistic, Christian-centered value system. That is their stated goal in the wedge document, and it's public information.
Absolutely. It's that's a Discovery Institute document.
Yes.
And like I said, this conversation is going to continue. This isn't the last time we're going to be talking about this, so please go to our website. Give us an email, and let's keep the conversation going, and we'll have a bunch of shows like this. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thanks very much. You bet.
And we'll see you next time.
Till next week.